When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay in the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome back to Japers Drink Radio. I am your host, Adam Stringham, and today I'm happy to be joined by co-host Greg Young and Jonathan Press. Let's start with Greg. How are you doing, Greg?
I'm doing well. I was talking to you guys a little before, but I have a gathering of friends that we've all had the COVID vaccine soon. So I am delightfully excited to do that and take a day off of hockey.
That is pretty nice. What about you, John?
I'm good. No complaints here. I feel like we are coming out of a long winter. I know that you're not going to give me too much sympathy being down in Texas, Adam, but it's been long and cold. And I think that the end, metaphorically and literally, is kind of brighter days, warmer days are ahead. So how are you doing down there in Texas?
I'm doing all right. It was a rough couple days. It's especially tough for the 4-month-old.
Yep.
We're fortunate to have really good friends down here that kind of treat us like second family, that we were able to go stay with one of the nights. Another night we had the hotel. So it was better than it could have been, but it was still not a lot of fun, to be honest. I mentioned on Twitter, the biggest problem was every time we lost power, we'd also lose cell service. And it doesn't sound like a big deal, but, you know, so many of us, that's how we get all of our information these days. So
sure.
We're just really cut off from everything. We weren't able to book a hotel one of the nights because of that. And just because we couldn't get service. So wasn't super fun. Being a northerner, I also did not know the local radio stations for news, and there's only so many times you can press seek on your car radio before you give up. So, but all things considered, it's better now. And that's certainly a step in the right direction. But enough about how I'm doing. Let's talk a little bit about how the Caps are doing.
Wow, nicely done.
Oh, it wouldn't be a good transition if Greg didn't comment on it. Capitals are coming off of a good comeback performance on Sunday against the New Jersey Devils. Most interesting to me, we saw them put up 40 shots. Which was great because the Capitals have just, honestly, in my opinion, have been a bit dull recently to watch. Even if they've won, they've been really playing at a pretty slow pace. I want to start with you, John. Kind of what are your thoughts on the Caps? What are you seeing? Are you still thinking they're a bubble team? Has your opinion changed at all recently? What's on your mind?
Well, I think they're absolutely a bubble team. And I mean, it's pretty simple, right? It's straightforward that there are four teams in the division that are going to make the playoffs of the eight teams in the division. I think it's pretty safe to pencil in the Bruins as certainly one of the top four teams in the division, probably the best team in the division. Probably pretty safe to put the Sabres down at the bottom. I think you could probably also put the Devils and the Rangers down there. So the way I see it, you've got the Caps, Flyers, Islanders, and Penguins fighting for three spots. And, you know, right now, who are the Caps definitely better than of those three teams? You know, the other three teams. And I don't know that you can say they're definitely consistently better than any of them. I mean, I think when they play well, they're better than all of them. When they play poorly, they're worse than all of them. So, you know, I was kind of thinking earlier, like, is the more pessimistic take that the Caps aren't playing well right now, despite a pretty reasonably good record and results, is the more pessimistic take that they're not playing well, or that they are, you know, that this is kind of they are who we thought they were? And I mean, to me, I think they are who we thought they were. And, you know, some of the percentages are a little bonkers right now. I would expect them over the long run to get better goaltending than they've gotten so far, which, you know, I haven't been happy with the goaltending. But, you know, they're also shooting the lights out of the place. That probably will regress a little bit too. So, you know, on whole, I think this is a bubble team. It's a team that might be good. They're definitely not great. So, you know, that's where I am on this team. And I think it's where I've been all along. And I haven't seen too much to change that. Although, you know, there have been some encouraging signs lately. And it's a team that's gone through, obviously, the big COVID sidelining of the four Russian players for a while and adjustment to a new coach, no preseason, shortened schedule with no, you know, fewer practices, games delayed and or postponed because their opponents get, you know, COVID or whatever. And for some reason, other teams get their games canceled, but the Caps don't. But, you know, so, yeah, that's me saying, it's overall right now in aggregate, it's probably where I would have expected them to be.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. You know, I think you talked about kind of when the Caps are great, they're great. One of the greatest games I thought to watch was the Caps Flyers game from a few weeks ago where, you know, Ovechkin and Wilson and Backstrom were all just on top of their game. And the Capitals, in my mind, were clearly the better team for that game. And goaltending was the difference. I believe the Capitals, up until maybe when they pulled their goalie, were getting maybe one save every or two saves out of every three shots or something like that. It was very, very brutal.
That was the one where they pulled Vanecek too, and it was and as they should have. Like, you just gave up a couple of really tough goals to give up there.
Yeah, it was, but it was still an exciting game because Ovi looked like vintage Ovi, and we're going to kind of go back to him in a second. But I want to first kind of, Greg, how do your thoughts kind of differ on what you're seeing with the Caps right now? How are your thoughts different from what John said?
No, I mean, I think I agree with a lot of what John said, because I think that we had a podcast before the year where we all said, I think they're a bubble team. I think that the Bruins are clearly the best team in the division. I think the Sabres are clearly bad. And weirdly, actually, I think our takes hold up there. I think the Flyers maybe are a little worse than we had thought they might be, but still, they're getting the results they need. So there you go. I think for the Caps, I guess my thoughts are, we've had 5 games or so with the whole lineup in, and they were 3-2, and they've had some really high highs and some really bad lows during that stretch. You think about, with the full lineup, they played this great game against the Penguins where they won 3-1, and you had the third line just go nuts, and really pretty much the whole team played well. And so you're like, okay, like, this is a full team with a full roster, and they just looked really good against one of the teams that they're going to be competing against. And then it was like, what? Like, 2 games later, they played maybe one of their worst games against the Rangers, where they were just sleepwalking through the entire game. And I mean, you hear so much of, oh, it's the afternoon games with the Capitals and yada yada, and then they give all these things about how, oh, our disruption happens and everything, and that applies to the other team exactly the same amount as does the Capitals. And so it's just a little baffling to me to hear that excuse. But that aside, I mean, they're 3-2 with their full roster. That's about a bubble record, and that's roughly about where I thought they would be. And I think it's going to – how they're getting there, I think, is really interesting. But, yeah, I mean, overall, from a 10,000-foot view, that's kind of what you'd expect.
Now, I'm going back to Ovi now, as I promised. I talked about, kind of in my mind, the high watermark of his season so far. Individually, was the game against the Flyers. And there have been some rougher games in between. Obviously, he scored the game, what ended up being the game-winning goal against New Jersey on Sunday. But, John, what are you seeing out of Ovi? I mean, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter kind of trying to say that they think he's really starting to show the signs of his age. I'm not quite so sure personally, but where do you land on that?
Well, okay. So I think that he hasn't been great so far this season, particularly at 5-on-5. And, you know, but I don't know that it's necessarily age related. So, you know, maybe I'm kind of splitting the baby a little bit on it. But, you know, the results are there. 15 points in 13 games. The goals are a little down. The assists are a little up. You know, but to me, he's not generating much at 5-on-5, but, you know, the team generally kind of isn't either. I mean, Carl Hagelin's getting more scoring chances per game at 5-on-5 than Ovi is. And that's he's obviously burying like one out of every 7,000 of those. But, you know, I honestly, if you look at stuff like scoring chance generation at 5-on-5, you know, individual scoring chances, individual high danger scoring chances, you know, the numbers don't look good for Ovi right now. And they got to figure that out. They got to get him with whichever of the top two centers is going to work for him. You know, they even had him out there with Lars Eller the last game to just try to get something going, and it's not really working. And you know, Nick Backstrom's got 22 points in 17 games. I think that those numbers are a lot better than his play has been, to be honest. And Tom Wilson's another one who was super early on, but man, he's, you know, kind of I don't know if it was that shorthanded goal that turned him into something else, or whether this has kind of been coming for a bit. But, you know, he hasn't been very good at 5-on-5 either. And, you know, it's a team right now. You know, this was an area that we probably fairly identified as concerning under the new coach, is 5-on-5 offense. And right now, it's probably my biggest area of concern. And you know, you've got guys in the top 9 like TJ Oshie and Richard Panik who don't have a single goal at 5-on-5 yet this season. And, you know, they've been generating a lot of chances. That was our new number on Monday, was just how overdue these guys are and how snake bitten they are. But at some point, you still got to score goals. And this team hasn't really been able to do it enough at 5-on-5. It's great to lean on guys like Jake Vrana and even Connor Sherry, but they need more at 5-on-5. And to me, that starts with Alex Ovechkin.
Greg, John talked a bit about trying to optimize Ovechkin in the lineup and get it. Obviously, he just said get more 5-on-5 offense. We saw Laviolette do some kind of funky line swapping on Sunday. John already alluded to it about putting Ovechkin with Lars Eller. What are your thoughts kind of on that optimization? And do you think it would lead to more 5-on-5 goals? Or where do you see the Caps lines kind of going moving forward?
Yeah, I think Ovechkin's a perplexing problem. And the reason why he's perplexing is that it's tough to find a center that is going to really maximize his skill set. Because you look at him with Backstrom, and they've tried the Ovechkin-Backstrom-Wilson line, and part of the problem with Ovechkin and Backstrom together these days is just speed. It's going to be tough for them in the neutral zone to kind of generate those offensive opportunities through it. So you think, okay, like, let's put him with Kuznetsov. And then you say, all right, like, they defensively, those two together are a train wreck. And that's been going on now for like 3 or 4 years. So I you get the idea of putting him with Lars Eller, just because Lars Eller seems to be one of the Caps that actually can generate offense. And so do I think that's a sustainable solution? Probably not, but I can kind of understand the rationale for it. But kind of zooming into your broader question, I think one of the interesting things to me, and I know JP, you've talked about this too, is kind of this idea that Laviolette has been happy to break up any part of the top three lines. And he's tried some different combinations. Some of them I like and some of them I don't. But he seems to continually be happy to put Carl Hagelin, Garnett Hathaway, and Nick Dowd together kind of no matter what. And I think you can kind of debate like the efficacy of that line. I'm not as high on them as a lot of people are. And so I think it's just kind of an interesting thought that Laviolette, kind of come hell or high water, is keeping those three together. And it may be the expense of kind of trying some different things, you know, even throughout the top six and top nine. And so I think that's interesting to me that he's sticking with that line. I think we could talk about the defense too, and I would imagine we will. It seems like Laviolette's tried basically every combination under the sun. And I think some of them, as John has alluded to and written about, have stuck. And some of them, mainly the Nick Jensen and Zdeno Chara pair, probably should not be together very much. And so I think if you're Laviolette, you're at the point now in the year where you've really tried a lot of different things. And I think some of them are going to be like, I think start to really try to see patterns in what he's doing. And we haven't really seen it yet, but also we've only had a full Caps lineup that's healthy for 4 or 5 games now. So I think I'm going to be really interested to see going forward kind of the patterns that he's been kind of generating, because I think so far it's been a little scattered.
So John, when we talk about kind of, Greg talked about the lines, but do you think we need to see some sort of infusion here of other players? I mean, Sprong, I thought, played really well earlier in the season. Obviously, Luke, who writes on the site, is all about Daniel Sprong. And Connor McMichael just put up his first professional hat trick in the AHL this past weekend. So the Capitals do have two more skilled players semi-available to them. Do you think they need to put them in, or do you think we can kind of just tweak what's kind of already available to us?
Well, I guess, you know, is Daniel Sprong better offensively than Hagelin or Hathaway? No question. You know, I don't think that's any question. But, guys like Hagelin and Hathaway kill penalties. So they're in the lineup. You're not going to put Daniel Sprong out there to kill penalties. You could put him in there to try to get a little spark from your fourth line and rejigger the penalty kill and maybe, you know, throw TJ Oshie out there a little bit more or even Nick Backstrom or whoever. But, you know, the reality, Greg, you know, noted that that line has been the one constant of the forwards so far this year. And it's because those three guys aren't good enough to play in the top nine. And so you have a top nine that you keep shuffling around. You just know that those other three guys aren't in the mix for any of those top nine positions. So, like, yeah, you could put Sprong in and get squeeze an extra fraction of a expected goal per game out of at your fourth line. But, you know, does it really matter if your top nine aren't producing the way that they need to, or specifically the top six? Because as we've noted, Sherry, Eller, and Ponick have been a terrific third line in terms of expected goal production. So, it's tempting to say, let's shuffle those young guys in. But, does Daniel Sprong really belong on a fourth line? No. I mean, Daniel Sprong's a guy who, if Connor Sherry gets hurt or if TJ Oshie gets hurt, you pop him into the lineup and say, okay, we're not going to lose that much. I don't think he's a guy that you pop into your fourth line. And, you know, similarly with Connor McMichael, you right now have two centers who can win a faceoff, and that's Eller and Dowd, who is actually up to almost 53%. Dowd's on a real faceoff heater right now. But you put Connor McMichael in, maybe you move Kuzi to a wing. Maybe it seems like a lot of shuffling of guys when the real problem is your guys. I mean, your guys got to be your guys. And those guys are Tom Wilson and Alex Ovechkin and TJ Oshie and Evgeny Kuznetsov and Nick Backstrom and Jacob Rana, instead of swapping in Sprong for Hagelin or Sprong for Hathaway, I would actually play the shit out of Jacob Vrana, a guy who does nothing but produce in when he's given the time. And so, you can infuse the lineup and maybe it's a different story on defense. Maybe we'll get there and talk about that. But up front, I don't see any, let Connor McMichael kind of develop a little bit in the minors in a role where they lean on him for scoring rather than being an extra here or whatever. Let Daniel Sprong, fill in as needed up here. But it really comes down to those top nine and specifically those top six just generating more and doing more on offense.
John, yeah. I want to ask you this because I not to interject the host. Would you keep the Sherry Ponick Eller line together, or were you kind of with Laviolette when he swapped them around?
I like the line a lot. It obviously had great chemistry and great results. I understand when he broke them up. I don't look at that as him breaking up the third line because they weren't doing something he wanted them to do. I see it as, okay, we've got three guys who are actually going. Let's try to spread those out and get the other lines going. And, sometimes that works. Sometimes it isn't as effective. I understand it's you don't break up a good line, and they've been a good line, unless your other lines aren't working and you're just trying to figure it out, the Sudoku puzzle that is, 12 forwards, four lines, three forwards on each line and everything, and figuring out how best to maximize that. So, if Sherry, Eller, and Ponick are at a 70% expected goals, and then the other two lines are at 45%, If you break up that third line and everybody can get to 55%, you're going to win more games. I didn't just do the math in my head, but I think you are. clearly, if you have three lines that can do something, and then if your fourth line can saw off their minutes, especially if they're being thrown out against, higher competition than they ought to be, then you're in business. But like, if you have a top six that are going to be in the 45 to 50 range, it probably doesn't matter how good your third line is.
Yeah, that's valid. You brought up a good point too about Connor McMichael. The Caps are fortunate this year that he's able to play in Hershey. Obviously, they were in a similar situation with Tom Wilson a few years back, where he was too good for juniors, but wasn't eligible to play in the AHL. So he played, that very limited minutes in the NHL. And this has been great that McMichael's able to get this time professionally, despite the fact that he's not ready for the NHL just yet, or at least not ready for big minutes. Greg, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about Evgeny Kuznetsov and what you've seen from him defensively.
Yeah, well, we ran the numbers. I think it was John and I kind of did this independently a few days ago, and they basically showed Evgeny Kuznetsov at like a shot suppression level that he has never had in his career. And I think if you look at it the last couple of games, particularly as he's played with Ovechkin, it's started to look, I think, a little more normal. But that being said, I think I've at least noticed a more engaged Kuznetsov in the defensive zone. And I think some of that is going to depend on who he plays with, because he's never going to be the anchor of a strong defensive line. That's just not Kuznetsov's game. And I don't think at this point in his career he's going to be changing his game super substantially to really become that kind of player. But I think with Kuznetsov, the big question that everyone has is, you say, okay, he's not going to be Mark Stone, right? He's not going to do that. But can he at least not be bad enough defensively to mitigate the considerable offensive gifts that he gives at the other side of the rink? And I think I need a little more data to see, kind of whether Kuznetsov is that player now or whether he's made consistent changes to his game. But I think at minimum, it's been interesting and something that I've kind of kept my eye on, at least early.
I think it's going to be interesting. John, have you noticed it? I mean, Greg already said you guys ran the numbers together, so I'm assuming you're on board with them.
I've noticed that the charts look good. that's what I've noticed. I'm not yet buying that Kuznetsov for Selke shirt. I think that's a little premature. And they're goosing the shit out of this dude's offensive zone starts. So that's something else to pay attention to.
Yeah, it's like 70% when we looked or something.
Right. Like I actually have Natural Stat Trick open here, and his offensive zone start percentage is north of 80%. And, you're shot suppression numbers are going to look all right when you start in the offensive zone, even if you only win 4 out of every 10 faceoffs or whatever. And, if you're maybe hopping over the boards when it leaves the zone, or, the other team's not getting those quality chances. So, he's off to a terrific start in terms of the underlying numbers. I don't think that Evgeny Kuznetsov has decided, okay, I'm going to dedicate myself to becoming the next Pavel Datsyuk, or, round out my game because it's time or something like that. It doesn't strike me like that's really in his character.
Yeah, he's always going to have that quote out there about how he probably could be one of the best players in the world, but he just he didn't think it'd be very fun. So
yeah, doesn't want to. Okay.
that's a quote that sounds perfectly fine after you win the Stanley Cup, but 3 years later of substandard defense, it's a little frustrating to see that.
Maybe I'm one of the few people that I'm just still not. I don't think any of the guys that are on that team that were on that team are ever going to be able to do something that will ever get me that riled up about kind of who they are as players or anything like that. They were, especially guys who were key pieces like Kuznetsov, who arguably was the best cap in that run. certainly had a case for the Conn Smythe. Let's talk a little bit about goaltending. John, you already kind of mentioned it. I want to get your kind of more specific thoughts. I think it's very interesting that the Capitals did not decide to go with Samsonov on Sunday, instead electing to play Craig Anderson. What are you seeing in that, and kind of more in general, just kind of thoughts on goaltending in general for the Capitals?
Yeah, I mean, I guess they didn't feel that Samsonov was ready, and it sounded like a conditioning thing as much as anything, because by all accounts, he was good in his last game in Hershey, and even good in the game he gave up five goals or whatever, which is why when you're don't judge a goalie's performance in the AHL by the out-of-town scoreboard, please. That's just incredibly reductive, and it's a league in which goalies can have good games and give up some goals, and bad games and not give up anything. So, you know, just like, let's use our heads and make let the people who actually saw the games tell us how the goalies did in those games. So but it does sound like it was a conditioning thing. And if he's not ready, he's not ready. And, you know, it's a guy who hasn't played in forever, and they want to make sure that he's ready to go. And Craig Anderson, I thought, was very solid. You know, happy for a fellow old guy getting in there and playing well. And he's a guy who, by all accounts, deserved a game and deserved a win. And so I'm glad that he got it. But, you know, so far, I think that the goaltending has been, I guess we could say that Vanacek's been good enough. I don't think he's been as good consistently as the goaltending they need if they're going to, certainly if they're going to make any noise come playoff time. But, you know, can they get to the playoffs with the kind of goaltending that Vanacek has given them so far? And I'm not sure they can. He's had his ups and downs. Obviously, workload is a huge part of that. You know, maybe Vanacek is a lot better if he's not playing a dozen straight games or whatever it was, 13. I don't know what he ended up at. But so it's hard to say where the goaltending is right now, but I think for years upon years, this has been the plan, that this year Ilya Samsonov would be the number one goalie for this team. And, you know, they let Philip Grubauer go. He's turned into a terrific starter in the NHL. They let Braden Holtby go. He won the cup in 2018.
Dodged a little bit of your performance there, John.
hey, you can never say anything negative about Braden Holtby to me without we will fight. And
he won a cup. That's all that matters.
And so it's forever. It's been the plan, was this year it was going to be Samsonov's time. And, you know, I loved the plan B that they put in place over the summer. It didn't work out because of Henrik Lundqvist's health issues. Vanacek has stepped in when Samsonov wasn't ready to go, and he was good enough. And I think that's what Kevin ultimately concluded in his piece last week on Vanacek. But right now it's time for Ilya Samsonov to step in and step up and take this goaltending position. It's not going to be handed to him, which is great. I mean, it's great that both Vanacek and Anderson have played fairly well in their recent starts. Well enough that it's not like, help me, Obi-Wan, Samsonov, you're our only hope kind of shit. So, but I mean, now's the time for Samsonov. So I'm super interested in seeing how he responds to that challenge. And really, I don't think it's a huge exaggeration to say this team is going to be as good as probably as he can be. And if he's very good, this team has enough to win some games. And if he's not very good and every game is going to be, who's the first team to 3 or 4, I don't think they can be very good. And so I am, no pressure, kid, but and it is his birthday today, I think. I think he's 24 today. So happy birthday, Ilya Samsonov. All our hopes lie in your glove.
Go win the Caps the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Well, and I'm with you, John, and I think it's the other thing I would say, and I this will hint at a little bit of what I'm going to hopefully release tomorrow is I like the Caps, at least from an advanced analytics standpoint, their goaltending hasn't been particularly good. They have two of the bottom three in terms of goals saved above replacement, although obviously Samsonov's only had two games. So I think I would agree with a lot of what John said, and I would also say that I think it's worth trying to make sure that we filter our thoughts of the Caps through the fact that they've gotten goaltending that you would say is probably below league average. And I think whether that'll continue or not, I think is an open question. And John is right. It's all going to be about Samsonov, and it's all going to be about whether he can be at least good enough to, make it so that the Caps aren't having to win 5-4 type games, because I don't think they have the offensive horses to really do that anymore. And yeah, I mean, no pressure to him, so enough time to step up.
Yeah, he's got an interesting case because, as JB pointed out, he was the heir apparent of some self-inflicted wounds at the end of last season, obviously not being able to join the team in the bubble because of some off the ice injury. And it then again with the coronavirus policy, breaking protocol, I guess, and then of course getting a very severe bout of the virus. So it's going to be interesting for him. Hopefully it's not too much of a Neuwirth-Holpe situation. We don't need anybody going in the media when they get home to Russia in the future and saying it's the easiest competition they've ever had or anything like that. If you guys remember when Neuer,
I guarantee you, Holpe read that quote though.
Oh, yeah.
All right, let's talk a little bit before we wrap this up about what's going on in front of the masked men. John, you wrote recently about the defense. You know, it's interesting. I mean, we talked so much when the season started about how the Capitals were activating defensively, getting involved in the offense. John Carlson obviously had a huge goal in Sunday's game against New Jersey. What are your thoughts on the defense, the pairings, and are we seeing Zdeno Chara kind of fall into a more optimal spot for him with a bit less minutes played?
I don't know about the Chara question, but I wrote a little while back, and it still holds that they have, they had three defensive pairings that are above 50% in expected goals at 5-on-5. And those three pairings just so happen to include each of the six defensemen once. So like if they rolled out Chara Carlson as the first defensive pairing, that pairing right now is at 51.8% expected goals. And that's probably playing in the toughest minutes that the Caps have had. I mean, that's protecting leads. That's starting in the defensive zone, because that would be the pairing that Peter Laviolette would throw out in tough situations. Then you have a second pair, Brendan Dillon and Justin Schultz. They're at 57.6%. Very good. Very solid in against secondary competition. And then Orlov and Jensen as, nominally a third pair, just absolutely killing it at 68.3% expected goals. Now, all those pairs are in the, 60 to 80 minute range so far. So they're small samples. But like, to me, when I see good results in small samples, my inclination would be, keep doing what you're doing until those samples are bigger and they either prove you wrong or they prove you right, because there's not necessarily reason to go away from that. But then you get into stuff like Chara and Schultz, for example, is at 50%. That's good. But that leaves Carlson and Dylan at 49%, at 49.5%. So that's your top four then with that really good Orlov Jensen pair. I guess that seems to work too, but then you're right around 50% instead of being north of, 52-53%. I don't know the answer. One thing I do know is that, people who say Chara needs a night off because he's old and tired, they obviously don't know Zdeno Chara's workout regimen and his cardio health and his fitness, because that motherfucker like climbs Kilimanjaro. He's like 43 and he like climbs mountains, and I promise you he's not tired. Is he getting slower as he's getting older? Yeah, probably. That I buy, but is Zdeno Chara getting tired? No, Zdeno Chara will probably never in his life experience what the three of us probably at the end of sitting at our desks for a day, like, man, I'm fucking tired, right? I guarantee that Chara barely ever gets there. So I don't think that's a problem with Chara. So, but certainly putting him out in situations in which he can be successful is key. And it's key for any of these guys. You want to put Dmitry Orlov in a spot that he can be successful. You want to put John Carlson in a spot that he can be successful. I mean, Carlson in that Sunday game against the Devils, I didn't think he looked good defensively, and then he does everything at the offensive end, and it was kind of a prototypical John Carlson game. So it like everything else, it's figuring out what works, how to deploy it, not just as defensive pairings, but also as five-man units. I think that I haven't really looked too much closer at that, but certainly you're going to want to consider who you're putting, which forward lines you're putting your defensemen out with, and whether you're giving them a chance to succeed. I know that Orlov Jensen probably played softer minutes and gotten some beneficial zone starts and that kind of thing. So it's all context. As far as I'm concerned, they've gone away from something that was working without really much reason to go away from it. So I'd love to see that them come back to that a little bit, and until it stops working.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, if it's not broken, don't fix it, the time old adage. I really don't have anything else that I specifically want to go over. We hit on all the stuff that I thought was kind of most interesting with how the game's been played, how the teams have been doing. I guess the last thing I do want to ask John, and then Greg, get your thoughts as well. I touched on it at the very beginning of our show, which was kind of the pace of play. And we saw kind of in those Saturday and Sunday games, the Capitals just, it's really more on Saturday, not on Sunday at all, were just playing a pretty slow type of hockey, almost coin flip-esque. Is that what you think they should be doing? And is that what they are consistently doing? John, I want to start with you.
Well, I think it is what they are doing. I think that they've sort of slowed it down. They're not really pressing the play. They're not aggressively forechecking. And I think part of that could be a lack of faith in the goaltending. If you start forechecking harder and trying to open up and get in a little track meet or something like that, you really need the back end to bail you out on those times when it doesn't work in your favor. So it could be that they're not confident enough in the goaltending to open it up. It could be that this is just how Peter Laviolette wants to play it. It could be that they don't feel or have the talent to necessarily start running and gunning. So I agree. It is almost, you know, Barry Trotz or even Dale Hunter-esque at times, you know, the chip and chase, get it deep, blah, 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 you know, get it out off the glass, et cetera. It's not thrilling hockey to watch. And, you know, there were times in that Jersey, I mean, in both games this weekend before the Caps really turned it on against Jersey, where it was just fucking boring, you know. Yeah. It just wasn't particularly interesting, especially at 5-on-5. I mean, a game's always going to be interesting when Alex Ovechkin's playing in it, but, you know, the hockey itself, just it's not what it was. And everybody, you know, the sooner they realize this isn't the Bruce Boudreau 2009-2010 Caps, the better it's going to be, you know, for everyone. So, I mean, should they be doing it? I don't know. Maybe it gives them the best chance to win right now. You know, try to, if given how good their power play's results have been, and, you know, maybe next time we'll talk about the power play itself a little bit more. But given how good the power play results have been and how solid the penalty kill is generally, how questionable their goaltending is, maybe it is best to kind of strangle the game at 5-on-5 and then try to win it on special teams. It's not appealing to the eyes, but maybe it does give them their best chance to win games right now versus opening it up. And, you know, we talked about the lack of speed in this lineup and you know, I don't know. I mean, it's probably not what anybody wants to hear, but maybe it's the way they should be going.
Yeah, and I think Adam or John, something you said there that was interesting to me is, and I think it kind of validates what you're saying, is that part of the frustration with Dale Hunter coin flip hockey was you were at a team with Alex Ovechkin, you had a team with all of these great players at the top of their powers, and you were basically forcing them at times to play with one arm behind their back. And I like now you look at the Caps, they have the oldest roster in the NHL, they have. Yeah, really kind of a speed deficient team. You have a coach that doesn't exactly do wonders for offense. You look at kind of Nashville, particularly towards the end there, and it's not, they weren't exactly lighting the world to fire offensively. And I think it's, at minimum, it's a defensible strategy, even if it is a little boring. So, yeah, I kind of agree with what John said.
Yeah, not, well, as John said, it might help to get some wins. Certainly will not help with kind of, ease of watching or in maybe, you know, enjoyment.
Hey, if they win, people will watch. That's what I think. That's what we've all learned.
Yes. Yes. If they win, they will come. That is true. Well, that's really it from me. Thanks guys for coming on. John, where can people follow you on Twitter? If they don't, again, if they don't follow you already, they probably aren't listening to this podcast, but just in case.
This podcast called Japers Rink Radio. Yeah, probably.
Yeah. You can follow me on Untapped at JPress41
with the big thing here.
Yeah.
To see the beers that I'm drinking. But other than that, you know, that'll be my plug for now.
Okay. Greg, you already teased your article. You said tomorrow. Tomorrow will be 2:23 for everybody that is eagerly awaiting.
All right, you're gonna make me go to my computer and really make sure I finish
yes.
it up.
Well, Greg, I will say you made the mistake of specifying when it would be out.
Sure.
Well,
did.
I also specified it to John in our Slack chat, so I'm
well, it's not official until it hits the airwaves.
Although I control when this podcast goes out because I'm the one on production detail.
I'll tweet it out if you don't put it out.
Sounds good. But to finish your thought, not to be so rude, but I will do that. You can find my stuff at this fine website called japersrink.com, and you can find me at Twitter at @GregY_JR.
Perfect.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot for joining us. I hope all of our listeners enjoyed this episode of the podcast. Please go on, give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Make sure you spell out that you want John Press to come on more episodes. I'm sure that would get him on. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen. Remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
Skip the waiting room. TireRack.com now offers convenient mobile tire installation in select areas. Simply shop TireRack.com for your next set of tires, and at checkout, choose Tire Rack Mobile Tire Installation. An expertly trained technician will arrive with your tires and install them on site, at home, at the office, wherever you are. You'll spend less time waiting and more time doing the things you enjoy. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Or your grandma here with us, making carne asada.
She does love a cold Corona.
Throw in some dancing.
Oh, we can watch the game.
I'll drink to that.
So a backyard concert with football, food, dancing, and Corona?
And your grandma.
Or we could keep it simple.
Simple is good. Want a Corona?
Thanks. Salud to the perfect day.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.